For KLSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Well, late last week, shortly after we recorded the show, we got word that Oklahoma journalist Frosty Troy had passed away. I just wanted to get your thoughts on Frosty. And Neva, let's start with you, who for years was the opposing voice of Fridays with Frosty.
Absolutely. And when I was thinking about that this past week, it's 19 years ago, I think next week, that Frosty and I kind of began that give and take for those years that we were on Thursday and Friday mornings. He really is someone that I think we should pause and recognize for his accomplishments and his contributions to journalism in the state of Oklahoma over 40 years covering. And he was one of those kind of classic stories. Here's a guy who was born to Irish immigrants, came to McAllister, graduated immediately out of high school. Joined the Army, served in Korea, came back, had a really an exemplary career in journalism in the newspaper business, and then became someone who was highly regarded for his point of view, certainly in the education community, not only in Oklahoma but nationwide. And while oftentimes we would be diametrically opposed on many issues, we still had a respectful regard for each other's colleagues, and I certainly would like to send condolences to both of his children and all of his extended family because his life is certainly worth noting the achievements that he made through the decades.
Ryan.
A real giant in Oklahoma history and someone whose legacy I think will live on for years to come. You know, whether you knew Frosty as somebody who spoke at your high school graduation, which, you know, many Oklahomans, that's their experience with Frosty Troy, was a high school graduation commencement speaker, you know, giving students this idea, this inspiration that Neva talked about of coming from Southeast Oklahoma and then being one of the most influential voices in Oklahoma politics. You know, he was a staple at the Capitol, and not just as a reporter, but as someone who would talk out nuanced policy ideas with everybody from Supreme Court justices to state legislators to governors. You'd find him in the basements early in the morning with around a table
at the old
snack bar in the Capitol basement. And you know, the conversations that happened there, you know, certainly I'm sure were influential on the trajectory of Oklahoma history. You know, here is someone who. Their voice, I think, the example that I take from him most, and you know, this is somebody, whenever I was in the legislature, there really wasn't a higher honor for me than being noted as in a laurel in the Oklahoma Observer. And, you know, I think probably once or twice I was probably in a dart as well. But that's the example I want to talk about is here's a guy who called out political cowardice and saw political expediency for what it was. And he had the courage to take on people not only on the opposite side of the aisle, but people in his own party, fellow liberals. You know, whenever they stepped out of their fundamental and protecting the fundamental principles and values that they held dear, he would call them out. And that's something that I think we've kind of lost right now, is the ability not only to call out the other side, but to call out our own, to look into ourselves and be an introspective person who can say, this is where I'm wrong, and this is where my friends are wrong.
And when you mention the Observer, I mean, the motto that everyone that followed it for any length of time, the Oklahoma Observer, knew was to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable was really his mantra. And he did it across party lines. He did it across any kind of line that you want to describe. And I think that was the thing. Even for people that vehemently disagreed with Frosty Troy, I think that they would pause and give due recognition to the fact that he did have an exemplary career in Oklahoma.
When you talk about laurels and darts, he would even give laurels, of course, certainly to people across the aisle. He was always saying, hey, I know this guy. He's a great friend. Didn't matter if it was, you know, Senate President Pro Tem Glenn Coffey or, you know, he was always fair and even across the board.
And you know, I think that there are a couple of ways that you can honor Frost. You know, first and foremost, if you don't have a subscription to the Oklahoma Observer, pick one up, go online, get your subscription, get it in the mail, get the digital version, get both. But honor him by supporting the kind of journalism that we desperately need in this era, in particular the Trump era. And then the second way is to act with political courage, is to speak out even whenever it's uncomfortable, even if it makes you uncomfortable because it may impact your political career, but also if it makes the people around you uncomfortable. That's precisely when you need to speak out the most.
On Friday, President Donald Trump took his oath of office, and a day later, an estimated 12,000 Oklahomans descended on the state capitol for the Women's March on Oklahoma, which mirrored events all over the country. Ryan, organizers say the event was not a protest or necessarily in opposition to the new president, but participants didn't seem too happy with the current commander-in-chief.
Well, and the current commander-in-chief hasn't given them a lot to be happy for. I mean, there have been voices since the election saying we just need to wait, you know, be patient. Let's see what happens whenever he gets elected or when it, once he takes office. He's taken office, and in this week that he's been in office, it has probably been one of the most disastrous weeks for the republic in our nation's history. It's right up there with any disastrous week in our nation's history. The undoing that we have seen from this administration of important laws and regulations, and the threat that's posed not only to our democracy, but to our existential well-being as well, by an unhinged man, you know, someone who His closest advisors now are speaking out to members of the media, I think, in an effort to give them a sense that here is an unhinged madman at the helm of our democracy, and perhaps we should even be considering things like the 25th Amendment's ability to remove the president. When 12,000-plus women and their allies showed up at the state capitol, they were sending a message not only to President Trump, but to the members of the Oklahoma legislature that they are here, that reproductive rights matter, that LGBT rights matter, that racial justice matters, that religious liberty matters, and that they won't stand for this anymore. I think that they're also sending a message to themselves that they're not alone. In Oklahoma, it's very easy, I think, to fall into despair that if you're a liberal or if you're a woman or if you're a minority, that you're alone because of the state's media state and of our legislature, which does not do a very good job of representing those issues. But Saturday's march was overwhelming. It was historic. And I think that it demonstrated that those folks are in Oklahoma and they're here in numbers.
Neva.
Well, first of all, I'm the first to say always that that what makes our democracy great is the opportunity for people to have a free discourse of ideas and to have the opportunity to have peaceful protests. And that's what we saw in Washington, D.C. That's what we saw across the country. And I think that is not a reflection of just a change of administration. It is what you say, Ryan. It does give afford all American citizens the opportunity to make their voice heard. And I think we all would agree that that is a healthy part of the process. To say that the sky is falling, to say that this is, you know, the bleakest time in history, I don't subscribe to the idea that just with the changing of the administration, that everything that is going on is all good or all bad. But what we're going to see is this process as Congress comes back in, as legislatures come back in the individual states, we're going to continue to see a spirited, vigorous debate on many of these issues. And I applaud that as part of the process.
Earlier this week, the House Speaker pulled the chairmanship from State Representative Dan Kirby, who is facing accusations of sexual harassment. The Speaker's move came after the Tulsa Republican announced he was refusing to talk to the committee investigating him. Kirby says the closed-door process doesn't allow him due process rights. Neva, your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, it seems that Representative Kirby seems to shift back and forth on what he thinks is the process and what he likes or doesn't like about the process. And I certainly think that Speaker McCaul has every right in leading these folks to decide who has a chairmanship and who doesn't, and who gets suspended and who doesn't. And so I think this give and take process is the backdrop to the larger picture that we talked about last week, and that is that this committee is working very, very quickly and very, I think, judiciously to get to a final report, and so that there can be some final resolution on this, hopefully before the legislature comes into full session here in just a few days.
Ryan.
Well, I mean, what we're seeing here is the Oklahoma House of Representatives essentially making this up as they go along. And that's because there's really no precedent for this. There's really no structure for this. Senator John Sparks has proposed that they create a standing ethics committee so that there would be a body that would have rules and procedures in place, so whenever something like this happens, you were able to walk right into it. And you know up front, this is what's going to happen. And when you're just making it up as you go along, I think that Representative Kirby and the other members of the committee that have refused to testify, refused to participate as members of the committee or as witnesses or as subjects of the investigation, I think that they have a valid concern. I mean, there's really nothing there to demonstrate that if they show up and testify that, one, their voices will be completely heard, or that the final report will accurately reflect what it is that they want to put in front of the committee.
But they can't have it both ways. I mean, that there is a House Rules Committee. They are investigating the issues at hand. And once those rules are set in place and the committee decides how it's going to function and move forward to get resolution of what they've been charged and tasked to do, then all of these other folks have to decide whether they're going to play by the rules that are set before them. They can't just unilaterally sit on the outside and throw these volleys and decide, I'd like this, I don't like this, today I'll do this, tomorrow I may not do that. I mean, that's what is disruptive and, frankly, very confusing when someone tries to get some clear picture of really what's going on in this whole process.
Well, what's interesting is he didn't pull the chairmanship after the sexual harassment complaint he didn't pull the chairmanship until he said, I'm just not going to speak.
After he had said he was. So, you know, he continues, there continues to be, at least from the reports that are out there, there continues to be this changing of one's mind based upon what they like or don't like in any given moment. And that's disruptive to the entire process. There is a process. People need to follow it. They need to come up with recommendations, and then they need to move forward as a result of that.
The final product here is, I think, something that Oklahomans are not going to have a lot of confidence in. I mean, given the legitimacy of the committee or its illegitimacy, you know, depending on who you listen to at this moment, the confusion about the committee itself, I think, is going to erode any confidence that we have in a final report. At the end of the day, the most important thing here is to ensure that employees of the Oklahoma House of Representatives feel like they can come forward with reports of sexual harassment, assault, abuse, whatever it may be, without being retaliated against. And I think that regardless of the particulars of this investigation right here, it's paramount that the House makes that assurance as to its employees.
Other Republicans made the list this past week for investigations. Oklahoma City Representative Elise Hall is facing an ethics investigation. Documents show Hall used her state-issued email to let Capitol employees know that the food truck she owns is available in the parking lot. Ryan, what's the problem with that?
Well, it's prohibited by law to use your position, your elected position in office, to further your own interest. You know, so sending this out and saying, hey, listen, come to my food truck, you know, does provide her a benefit. If folks go down there and buy something from her food truck based on this email, then she gets a monetary benefit from that. At the end, I doubt that Representative Hall was sitting around saying, oh man, here's a great way to make some money. That's probably not what happened here. It was probably just an inadvertent thing. It was either they used the wrong email, or they even used the right email, but they just didn't even think about it all that much. Representative Hall, my recommendation to her would just be just say it was an accident. You know, just own up to it. And now she initially said, I don't think that I did anything wrong. I think you just own up to it. You say that you'll remit to the state anything that you need to. You're going to face the consequences, and you move on with the legislative session. And the people of Oklahoma, I think, would forgive that.
And I think what we're going to find is, once again, this is this kind of first volley, and there's probably much more to the story. From what I understand, it was Representative Hall's office under the previous speaker in the last session who was charged with the task of basically, you know, sending out a weekly email saying, you know, one line, this food truck will be in this parking lot at this time on this day, which happened every week you know, consistently. And yes, here's the rub. Representative Hall does have a food truck, and so on one of those weeks, it would appear that her food truck was one of those in the parking lot. So I think you're right, Ryan. I mean, to me, it rises to a bigger question of why all of a sudden do we have someone, again, I would surmise it begs the question, here's someone on the committee, the rules committee, that is part of this investigation, and now we're kind of throwing throwing this into the mix as some question on whether or not there's been an ethics violation, which unless there's a lot more out there, which I don't believe there is, we're seeing something that is more confusing than it is answering any questions. So, but it does need to be fully resolved, and there is, again, a process for that. I mean, people can bring an ethics complaint on any and everything they choose to do, and it will be fully vetted. And I believe there is a process in place where these folks, if something needs to be addressed, it will be. And if something is bogus or has no foundation, that will also be found out as well.
Certainly not anything to get her removed from office.
No, absolutely not.
Also, maybe a lesson for other lawmakers that, hey, you know, by the way, there's a rule that you can't.
There are these rules, you know, and this is, you know, this is a good way to learn that rule, yeah. Because it seems pretty of little consequence. So let's get it out there. In the grand scheme of things, when at the state level, when we've got, you know, revenue failure being talked about, when we've got, you know, legislators trying to marginalize minorities and women, and at the global level, at the national level, when we're literally having smart people talk about the prospect of a nuclear winter, this seems pretty small fries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hope Representative Hall is able to put this behind her with good speed.
And a former legislative leader is paying back $10,000 in travel expenses to the House. The repayment order and a suspended sentence was handed down to Gus Blackwell for what amounts to double billing for accepting state reimbursements and using campaign funds to pay for the same trips. Neva, your thoughts?
Well, I think, first of all, I mean, it is, this is one of those classic cases where we have a process. It has gone through. We now have seen last week Representative Blackwell pleading guilty to this single felony perjury count, paying back the money. There are still some issues still at hand with other things that are unresolved out there, I believe, with on the Ethics Commission side. But the bigger picture is, once again, we have a situation where the rules are very clear. And I think as these issues get put forward and they're fully vetted and they fully are investigated, then we see some resolution to it. We remember that it wasn't that many years ago that a former insurance commissioner was convicted and actually served prison time for very similar circumstances. So I think it does rise to the level of making everyone that is in public office that have these rules that they need to follow that are very black and white and constantly being changed by the Ethics Commission, that people need to pay attention to them. And certainly this is a entirely different set of issues to be discussed as something that we were talking about in our previous conversation.
Right.
It's apples and oranges.
Well, yeah, and it's not comparing them. They just happened to all fall in the exact same week. And
yeah.
It's not like there's a surge of these. It just happened to be all in the same week that these came down.
You know, and I'm sure that Representative Blackwell is happy to be able to put this behind him. I mean, he's going to have this 5-year probation hanging over his head. He's going to have a felony conviction. He's paying a serious price for this. And, you know, with the civil suit by the Ethics Commission, could be paying a literally serious price of upwards of $60,000 in reimbursement to the state treasury. Again, at the end of the day, I seriously doubt that that Representative Blackwell was sitting around and saying, boy, how can I defraud the state of Oklahoma of this money? It was, you know, it was probably an oversight. And you know, now, does that make it right? Does that justify it? Absolutely not. And it's a lesson that I think other legislators should, you know, take to heart and recognize that when they get up there, that they're not above the rules, you know, that they have to play by these rules, whether they're intentionally defrauding the state or not. Again, in the bigger scheme of things, you know, we have legislators that are intentionally doing things at the state capitol that are closing rural hospitals, putting schools at 4 days a week, and destroying our state's infrastructure. You know, those are the things that I think ultimately are going to have a greater consequence on the people of Oklahoma. That said, all of those people making those decisions have rules that are applicable to them, and they need to follow them to their best of their ability. And Representative Blackwell's case is certainly an example of how not to do that.
Let's move on to this legislative session is coming up very soon. Last week marked the deadline for bills to be posted for the upcoming legislative session. More than 2,000 bills were filed in the House and Senate. Are there any which immediately grabbed your attention? Ryan, let's start with you.
You know, I think that, you know, we have a number of bills, again, that are seeking to marginalize people in the LGBT community in the state of Oklahoma and marginalize women. And I think, you know, we're seeing these efforts ramped up because we have a misogynist in chief now who has made it his business and made a political career out of bullying individuals. And we're seeing that in legislation right now that would you know, continue this conversation that's been happening in Oklahoma and would ultimately set us way back in terms of advancing civil liberties and civil rights in our state. We have a number of bills that deal with reproductive rights in the state of Oklahoma. Some of them would do some good. You know, Representative Virgin and others are looking at bills that would increase sex education in the state of Oklahoma, make it scientifically relevant. And then we have other bills that would essentially, you know, outlaw and ban abortion in the state of Oklahoma in a way that's, you know, diametrically opposed to the United States Constitution. At the end of the day, you know, how far any of these bills get, I hope it's not far. We'll see. We've got new leadership in the House and the Senate. This is their opportunity to say, are we going to focus on the revenue failure that our state's facing right now, or are we going to continue the sideshow of marginalizing people in the state of Oklahoma?
Neva.
I think first of all, we will see, I would expect that we'll see the real ID addressed mm-hmm. and probably on the governor's desk within a couple of weeks at the beginning of this session. There is every indication that that's kind of in the works and can happen rather quickly, and that will allow the implementation to get started even more quickly. I think we'll see all of the issues that basically were left on the table or still being discussed last session come back. I mean, the teacher pay raise, I think when we look at things like the tax credits, I think the repeal of the wind credit certainly seems to be one that's high up on the board for some serious discussion. I think we'll see we'll see some serious discussion, I think, on whether or not we have any changes in terms of tax increases. Will there be a cigarette tax debate? Will there be gasoline tax, tax on services? Will we look at repealing any of the tax cuts? I think there'll be less attempt to have any repeals, but I think there will have to be some serious conversation about where do we look in not only adjusting budgets, but where do we find additional revenue? And this is, as you say, Ryan, the big unknown is we have a new legislature with a lot of new faces, and will they come to the table with a different point of view on how to really tackle long-term these budget holes that we continue to face in the state?
I was surprised a third of the House bills, there were a lot of House bills, more than mm-hmm. we've ever had before, but a third of them are shell bills.
Yeah.
That's a lot of bills that don't have any language in them, which can be kind of scary.
Well, it makes it very difficult for legislative advocates that are, you know, watching the bill process, because these bills are weaponized delivery systems for any sort of language that a member wants to put in there. And so, what these bills ultimately become, we don't know. Some of them, you can kind of look at them and guess what they're going to be. And some of them, are shell bills that are filed so that somebody can say, hey, I filed a bill. I did this. Look at this mail piece. It's got a title. And if you look at the actual bill, there's nothing there. So we'll see as the process goes along, the increased number of shell bills is concerning.
Well, I think it's mainly because there's 32 new members in the House, and when you get a third of your
House, I think it's part of that process. Yeah. I think they were on a very fast pace coming into office in mid-November, and with this very quick deadline, I think that you have a lot of folks that are really trying to get up to speed, have some very significant issues and ideas that they want to put forward, but don't have all of the details put in place. And frankly, as we know, with many of those types of bills, they won't go very far this session in all likelihood, but they will be at least in the dialogue, and they will move forward and hopefully come back in the next session if there's real merit to having them discussed.
It's an interesting dynamic, because you have a lot of folks that are running on the platform that government does too much and that government's the problem. But then when they get elected, you've got eight bills to do something with. In the Oklahoma House of Representatives, you get eight bills that are guaranteed to assignment of some committee of substance. And there's this sense of, oh my gosh, I've got these eight bills. I've got to fill out all my eight bills. And you've just been running a
campaign.
Although
not everyone does that.
Not everybody does that.
In all fairness,
But there is this, I felt compelled to do that whenever I was in the legislature.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people do as well. But it's interesting. Everybody's got to file these eight bills, and you're scrambling to come up with ideas right up to the bill filing deadline.
Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.